Morning. I'm Susan Drummond, the Kitsap County Hearing Examiner. Today is Wednesday morning, about 9 a.m., October 10th, 2018. We have two items on the agenda. The first is a conditional use permit request for a wireless communications facility. And the second is a shoreline variance request for a single-family residence. And we'll hear the wireless facility proposal first and then the shoreline variance second, consistent with the agenda. The order of procedure on both of these will be pretty much the same. We'll hear from staff first. They'll provide a summary of the proposal. And for both proposals, a staff report has been prepared with attached exhibits, and I have looked at those. And then following the staff presentation, the applicant will have an opportunity to present. Then we'll open up the hearing for public comment. Anyone who is here who wishes to provide testimony on the proposal may do so. The applicant will then have an opportunity to address concerns which are raised. The planning department may have questions or further clarifications, and I may have questions throughout. So I think with that, why don't we go ahead and get started on the conditional use permit request for the wireless facility. That's case number 18-00716. Good morning.
Good morning.
Your name for the record?
My name is Jeff Smith.
And you swear to tell the truth today?
Yes, I do.
Thank you.
The purpose of this facility today is a part of a capital improvement program to improve 911 service in our neighboring jurisdiction in King County. And again, my name is Jeff Smith. I'm representing the Department of Community Development. And the proposal today is for the Puget Sound Emergency Radio Network, proposing a wireless communication facility near the northwest corner of the subject property. It consists of a 194-foot self-supported lattice tower, which will include four antennas, two microwave dishes on a tower that's required to be reviewed through Kitsap County Code Title 17. It's under wireless communication facilities. And there's specific criteria for conditional use permits in .060. There's associated ground equipment, and it's a 50 by 50 lease area. It's like I said, it's near the northwest corner of the property. It'll include shelter. It'll include a 1,000-gallon fuel tank, a generator. And the main intent of this facility is to improve coverage on the west side of Vashon Island. This subject property is located in South Kitsap County, south of View Park Road. It is located at 8994 Southeast View Park Road. And it's the east of Banner Road. And it's also south of South Worth. This is a central parcel map showing the subject property. It's irregular shaped. It's shaped like a boot. It's approximately 6 acres in size. It's predominantly flat towards the north side of the property with vegetation around the perimeter, mostly around the west side, south side, and east side. There are stands of trees also along this east side up here. Along the north side of this property and just the northwest side of the property, there are a few trees here and there. Right now the property is zoned rural residential, and that includes a house and includes half dozen outbuildings. This property has been used as a mill site for over 30 years, many years. And as part of this proposal, the responsible CEPA official issued a mitigated determination non-significance. That's Exhibit 27. And that was on September 20th, 2018. And expiration date was October 4th, 2018. And there were no appeals filed, no comments on that. This is an aerial of the property. It's, like I said, it's predominantly flat towards the north end and slowly slopes towards south. There's some severe slopes on the east corner, south corner, and then there's some moderate slopes on the west corner. The facility is going to be located on the north side near the access road, and that's about 430 feet from the south property line, and there should not be any impacts related to that. This is considered an unmanned facility. It's an accessory use to the predominant use of the residential use in this zone. So since it's an unmanned facility, it won't require sewer and water. It just requires adequate separation between those facilities. So the facility is reviewed under the decision criteria in 17.530.060 under wireless communication facilities. And the first test, is there public need? And well, the applicant looked at a number of sites related to this facility. They looked at a site over here north of View Park Road. There's an old existing, what we call as the KPLU tower. It's 120 feet tall. They needed to locate off that because of just the change in weight. And there was some question if there was enough room for all the equipment. So it was advantageous to go and look for another site. They looked at a property just northeast, right behind the KPU tower, but there wasn't enough screening on that property. There's also a tower owned by Crown Castle. It's a T-Mobile site. It's about 150 feet tall. It's a monopole. Wouldn't support the equipment. The KPU tower is owned by America Tower. So the best alternative was to have a slightly shorter tower here, where there's not a tower where it will not directly impact adjacent property owners because it's pretty well screened by vegetation on this property and then around the property. So this will provide a really good view of line of sight of West Vashon Island. Because the tree line opens up right around in here and looks down that way, and it goes, just slope just drops right off. At least on some of the maps show that there's a potential wetland in this general area on the slope. Property is zoned rural residential, and that's one dwelling per 5 acres. It's a conforming lot. And also zoned one dwelling per 5 acres. And this shows the general site plan. It's the access is across an easement from a property owner to the north off of View Park Road. And the tree line follows the west, south, and east sides right through here. Get to this part right here. One of the tests that the applicant is required to do is do RF propagation maps to show how is the facility going to change the coverage. What are the goal objectives, and is it the minimum necessary to do that? Well, the applicant has showed this is the coverage or lack of coverage on the side for 911 service on Vashon Island. So by including the tower, it greatly improves the RF signal on this across Vashon Island. And also provides a connection up to Capitol Hill in Seattle, as far as the handoff. So staff believes that it meets the test as far as showing the need. One of the major intent of the code is to limit visual impacts on surrounding property owners and then on any significant viewscapes. And then showing that you've looked at other possibilities of co-locating first, and then next is building your own facility. Then the following one is viewscapes. How are you going to protect viewscapes? So the applicant was required to do a courtesy notice to surrounding property owners within 400 feet and advertise approximately 14 days ahead of time and do a balloon test. So the applicant did a balloon test. It was up for a couple hours, a red balloon, tethered on a rope about the height of the facility, and went around and took pictures of the site. So here's an example of, you can see where this yellow dot here is where the photo, where the tower is, and then the red dot is where the photo was taken. So you can kind of see there's nothing here, but where the photo simulation's got down to pretty much of a science today. So it shows that the tower is visible, but a significant amount of that tower is screened by existing vegetation. Granted, the vegetation's on surrounding property owners' property, but it does provide screening. Again, here's the tower location. And then here's where the photo was taken. It's probably at least a mile away. You can see there's a line right here. I'd say less than half the tower is showing. It is a pretty tall tower. It's 194 feet, so it's pretty much significantly screened. It's going to be a long time before there are any trees that are going to be that tall. But it does, as you get further back, this is where one of the few areas where you can actually see it is when you get a long distance away. Well, it's not a major impediment on the view scape in this area. When it kind of blends in, it has the same vertical patterns as the vegetation around it. So it's less than a moderate impact based on this. And this is east of Banner Road, so it's quite a ways away. And that's what the tower is going to be looking like. And that's just right on the same property. Not far from the property owner's home. So through SEPA and through land use approval, one of the requirements is to have the tower painted a dark, flat earth tone green. So that would help to help improve compatibility with the surrounding residential neighborhood. So when that tower is sticking up and people will be looking at something that blends into the viewscape. One of the advantages of a lattice tower is the light goes through it. Versus if you're looking at a monopole that a lot of wireless communication facilities or people use, it's a solid pole. And the massing is a lot different from what's around it, so it really kind of sticks out a little bit more. But this will turn out nicely. Let's see if I have it. And here's another view of.
Just for the record, there was an audience comment to speak a little louder. So.
Okay, I'll speak a little bit louder. Can you hear me now?
Can you hear back there now? Yeah.
Oh, of course. The balloon test is required to provide visual impact analysis. The applicant's required to provide public notice ahead of time before flying the balloon. And it's 400 feet around the subject property. And the balloon was up for a couple hours. I went out there and looked at it myself. And the balloon test is used to provide the photo simulation of the site and around the subject properties. Like I was saying, is that the photo simulation process is pretty scientific nowadays. It's not just a matter of just throwing on a graphic and calling it good. There is some measurement and context to how that is being displayed. So there's over a half a dozen locations where the applicant took photos of the balloon, and there's only a few areas that was really significantly could be seen, and there's one spot on View Park Road to the north, and then as you get further down towards Banner Road, which you're looking at over, let's say, a mile away, and this fits right into the viewscape. It just sticks up above the tree line. And then one of the other requirements of this is we did contact the neighbor to the north about assuming some kind of tree line or easement for a buffer to have something in perpetuity with the tower. The neighbor wasn't willing to do that, because they wanted the flexibility of someday logging the whole site. But they did ask the tower be moved about 50 feet, and they felt that was adequate enough. One of the things that staff has asked for is...
Was that phone communication, or is that communication in the record, or is that that consultation, or...
I believe it is. Okay. But it is notated in the staff report.
Okay.
So what we decided, staff and the applicant, is we decided to provide some future screening to be in perpetuity of this facility. It would be to provide a landscape strip around the north side and the northwest side of the property. That'd be approximately cedar trees, would be 10 feet on center, two rows offset. It would take a long time to provide screening of it, but there's a strong possibility that they'll adequately screen the base of the tower, that those trees to the north are ever logged. And that would be a condition of approval for once they request a certificate of occupancy for the structure, that those would be planted and in place. So Mr. Neal has moved his laydown yard and his lumber area more or less to the west and to the south. Granted, where the facility is going, so we're going in the middle of the access road, so they have to have another way to get around that. There wasn't any timber logs in the laydown area along that road, so it was all offset. This map shows you this is the mill site. There's single family homes down here, and there's just various outbuildings as far as garages and sheds. So the existing vegetation on the west side down below, and then around the south property line, and then on the east side. But that will stay in perpetuity anyway. But those are steep slopes, and wouldn't want them removed because of slope stability issues. But they will provide an adequate screen around the base of the tower. One of the requirements is that that there's opportunities for co-location for other people who want to co-locate. As far as AT&T, I believe, showed some interest. Kitsap County Emergency Communication has shown a general interest in it. At this point in time, we don't know when they'll be co-locating on this tower because there's a cost of, right now they're on that KPLU tower right now, so the cost of moving facilities over, and Kitsap County needs to talk to King County and figure out what's the best way to go.
Yeah, I saw there was documentation in the record of the notification and consultation on DISINCOM.
Yeah, so that part of the process worked, and that's a requirement of the code, that, right. that everybody's notified, so everybody's aware of what's going on. One of the other requirements, or at least it's something that we show that there's a regulations for, is there. This is something on another facility that was brought up, where there's the neighbors are concerned about electromagnetic radiation. Well, under the Wireless Communication Act of 1996 that was signed into law by President Clinton, that stuff was not an issue that local government can dive into and regulate. That's a federal issue, and we can't get into the health effects of electromagnetic radiation. So local government can only look at compatibility through a land use process. So the department gave proper public notice, required to provide public notice 800 feet around the subject property, and the department did not receive comments based on that response. 800 feet? That's under Title 21, requires that we give 800 feet public notice around the property. It's all land use projects, even this conditional use permit. So therefore, staff gives a recommendation of approval based on the 23 conditions in the staff report.
Okay. A couple questions first. The exhibits, I've taken a look at exhibits 1 through 36, which includes the staff report. I assume you want to admit all of those.
Yes, I do.
Okay, great. And then the staff presentation, which is this PowerPoint, I'll need to get a copy of that, but that would be exhibits 37.
37.
So yeah. I'll admit that one as well. And then I had a question on the criteria. Chapter 17530 is the criteria that you went through, and I'm required to find consistency with those criteria. The staff report also mentions the traditional CUP criteria, which address compatibility, consistency with the Title 17, and you know, the lack of material detriment. So I'm assuming I'm looking at both of those criteria.
That's correct.
Okay.
And that is concluded in the findings at the very end.
Right. Yeah, I saw that.
Mm-hmm.
Those are my questions right now.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Smith.
Thank you.
Is the applicant here? Yeah. Good morning.
Hi.
Can you state your name for the record?
Rick Cardoza.
And you swear to tell the truth today?
I will.
Thank you.
I'd like to introduce some
I think we've got a placeholder of 38, and Ms. Walston, for the sign-in sheet, and then 39 on the notice decision. Do you want to just keep with that numbering and then add those starting at 40? Okay.
I have, I just have one. Yeah.
I'll Why don't I take those, and then we'll sort it out after the hearing. Let me just take a quick look so I know what I've got here.
And they are somewhat redundant, possibly a little more, provide a little more visibility as far as the maps,
okay,
the photo simulations. And I can describe what those exhibits are in correlation to conditions or other materials.
Okay. It looks like you've got 7 exhibits, though, so we'll number those 40 through 47, and I will go ahead and admit these. You can go ahead and proceed.
Okay. Thank you. Puget Sound Emergency Radio Network proposes to construct a wireless telecommunications facility known as View Park, which consists of a proposed self-support tower 294 feet with 4 antennas and 2 microwave dishes on the tower, a pre-manufactured equipment shelter for electronic equipment is proposed with an emergency backup power generator, all within a 50 by 50 fenced compound on the subject property. A diesel tank for the generator fuel is proposed inside the compound near the shelter, and there would be a day tank needed inside the shelter to fuel for emergency backup power in the event of a power outage. Access to the facility is on an existing grade as shown in the attached plans from the existing road approach at Southeast View Park Road. Power is proposed to the facility underground from an existing PSE power pole located on adjacent parcel. Just a brief primer. The RF technology used by PCERN and other wireless carriers governed by FCC is commonly known as line of sight technology. There are 2 types of antennas associated with wireless communications facilities. Coverage antennas, which are mostly, most of the time you see those as panel or rectangular type antennas, but in this case they're omnis, long slender antennas. They provide signal to a geographic area to pick up and transfer calls or hand off to other wireless communications facilities. If a caller is in transit. The other type is microwave antennas, which are mostly round dishes that work on a point-to-point transfer of calls from a facility to a site with fiber connection or directly to a call center called a switch. The interconnection of calls in this method is called backhaul. So that's the difference between the 2 types of antennas that are proposed. The omni antennas are coverage. The microwaves are for backhaul. Coverage antennas require adequate line of sight to work effectively, so they tend to be on tall structures or at a high geographic location to avoid trees or other major obstructions. Microwave antennas require direct line of sight. That we also refer to that as point-to-point. With no obstructions between the microwave dishes. And I can just briefly summarize the items I've entered into the record. Number 1 is the coverage map, and that shows the coverage that Mr. Smith described.
Yeah, it was on that PowerPoint.
As far as propagation before and after, which shows the need for the coverage for the system to work effectively utilizing the proposed tower. And then after is the modeling of how that coverage would actually achieve the purpose. The second one is an actual color swatch that we provided showing a dark green color. In this case, entered into the record was the Isle of Pines, and we're working with Mr. Smith on the exact color, which is one of the conditions that it be approved prior to the issuance of the building permit. Third is the photo sims, which were described in detail. The color of the tower would be modified from the photo sims to better reflect the surrounding trees in the area. Number four is the emissions report, or what's commonly known as a NEER report, and that demonstrates compliance with FCC guidelines for emissions. Number five is the FAA determination, and that determination was provided with no requirement for lighting. That's also one of the conditions, that there be no lighting except for worker lighting at the base, which would be hooded and turned down. So there's no FAA type red beacon, no strobe, no lighting on the tower required for air navigation. Number six, we provided a non-viability memo provided by PCERN, which looked at the tower nearby. And there were several issues with the tower as far as it does not have structural capacity to carry the loading. That would be the additional loading that PCERN needs in the way of the two types of antennas and number of antennas. It also foregoes any ability by PCERN to add capacity. So part of the issue is that it currently is not structurally capable, but it wouldn't meet the future needs of the network as it grows and may expand at some point. And the I've also provided the microwave study, which is a lengthy study, but the essence of the study is the actual path. And this, again, is the point-to-point, which is the reason that the microwaves need to be at the height that is proposed. I can talk a little bit more about that. The site is flat, so it doesn't meet one of the requirements or typical things that carriers look for, which is to get height. They could therefore thereby reduce tower height. In this case, it's flat. There's trees around, there's trees in the area, which is the reason for the requested height. And in general, the coverage objective was discussed as far as the western side of Vashon Island, which together with the microwave studies constitute the RF justification for the requested height. As a result, the coverage antennas are proposed at 160 feet in height, and that's needed to clear trees and provide the coverage that's modeled in those maps that were provided. The microwave studies show point-to-point connection or backhaul to two other PCERN sites. The study shows that the microwave dish to Capitol Hill needs to be at 190 feet, and the microwave dish to a site called Top Hat, which is in Federal Way, needs to be at 180 feet. So the graduation of the equipment from the 160 feet for coverage to 180 feet for backhaul to Top Hat, and then to 190 feet for backhaul to Capitol Hill. And obviously, with an emergency services network, the there's a need to have backup as far as backhaul, and there's a need to shoot to adjacent these adjacent towers, and to also try to get to a fiber network in the future. The as a result, the location, the height, and the equipment is needed for PCERN to provide essential emergency services regarding function of the site and as part of the overall Puget Sound Emergency Radio Network. The facility and the network provide emergency 911 communications, and the system is enhanced to provide intercommunications between first responders. So it's your typical 911 type, but there's enhanced services between first responders and agencies in that way. The photo simulations were discussed as far as the balloon test. And just to recap, the screening measures that are proposed to mitigate any visual impacts include the use of the existing vegetation on the property and surrounding. Planting of the western red cedars is the species that was requested in two areas on the property border, and use of non-reflective equipment on the tower. The one thing that I do need to bring out is that although the tower can be painted, the antennas cannot be painted. That would negatively affect the performance, technical performance of the antennas. And in closing, the FAA determination is, again, demonstrates that there's no requirement for lighting of the tower.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anything else from the applicant at this time? Okay. We will open this up to public comment now. It looks like I have five people on the sign-up sheet. Ken Ferguson is first. Are you? Did you wish to testify? Go ahead and step forward.
Thank you.
Your name again for the record.
My name is Ken Ferguson.
And you swear to tell the truth today.
Beg your pardon?
You swear to tell the truth today.
Oh, I do.
Yeah, great. Thank you.
You bet I do. My name is Ken Ferguson, and I live directly across the street from this proposed project. Before I get into the comment about this particular project, I do have to give you a little history of the Puget Sound Emergency Radio Network in regards to our neighborhood and the stuff that happened last year when DCD and Pyramid Communications and the PSERN proposed to put a 330-foot monopole antenna behind my property. After all kinds of unusual activities and whatnot, we called the building inspection department and said, hey, there is something major going on behind us, and we don't know what it is. They came and issued a stop work order
for the project.
We were horrified to find out that this project was a county project with DCD, PSERN, and Pyramid Communications to build this antenna. They had no clearing permit, no grading permit, no logging permit, no legal road access. They were using my wife and I's property to gain access to this site. They literally destroyed a beautiful, pristine piece of property. I got a chuckle about the western red cedars being planted because on the lot in question, they cut the old growth western red cedars down without forestry permit and a logging permit. And to this day, they're still stacked up on that vacant lot that they abandoned approximately 6 months ago. My wife and I were forced to get and were awarded by the court a harassment no contact order issued against Pyramid Communications and their agents, which included DCD, Mr. Smith, and everybody that was involved in the project for harassment. We had contractors showing up on our property at 6:30 in the morning, all hours of the day, ignoring closed gates. My next door neighbor, Pilar Perry, is here also. They were doing the same thing, knocking on the door at 6 o'clock in the morning, hey this, hey that. We weren't given notification for our balloon test. I have our balloon test on video here. And I'm really surprised to hear Mr. Smith for the second time in less than a year tell me that he notified everybody in the area about the balloon test. I live about 647 feet from this site. I fall within 800 feet, and we were not given notice for the second time regarding this balloon test. Long story short, after a bunch of legal wrangling, and I'm limited on what I can say, due to current litigation, my wife and I were forced to sign a confidentiality agreement, non-disclosure, so I'm very limited on what I can say and what I can't say about what happened on our road, which is just across the street from this site. So, this is the mess that I was left with when they accessed my property and started running their fiber optic cables and their electricity. We came home from a European vacation and found our road opened up. It's 650 feet long. My driveway was opened up from stem to stern. There was a huge mess, and as the contractor was driving away, I said, "Hey, what about the road? Are you going to come back?" "Oh, yeah, we'll be back tomorrow to come and fix it." Never saw him again. My wife and I incurred $1,875 worth of repair costs out of our pocket for grading and gravel to return our driveway to usable condition. I have a bid for $2,400 for the road approach that was destroyed during this construction, and it looks like we're going to be on the hook for that also. So let's talk about what's going on across the street, because obviously it's going that way because of what happened on our side of the street. Pyramid Communications and Motorola and American Tower Corporation decided to pull out of the project that was behind us. I'm assuming due to legal implications. They were working with no permits. They were violating a stop work order issued by the DCD itself. And the day that they did the balloon test, the stop work order permit, or notice, I should say, had been posted for well over a week. We called the building inspector, like we were told to do so. Deputy Trout from the Kitsap County Sheriff's Office responded. The gentleman that was working for Pyramid Communications at that time picked up his cell phone, made a call to DCD, and they were allowed to continue. And if you read the verbiage of the stop work order, it says all work. It doesn't say except for, it says all work. Anyway, that is the history, and that is our experience so far with the PSCRN and DCD building projects. Unfortunately, what we were left with when they abandoned the site was a clear cut. It used to be beautiful, pristine green. I can show you some satellite pictures where it was completely forested. Old growth western cedar and several old growth alders and other trees. And now we're looking at just a huge hole in the ground. Thank God the man commissioner upstairs helped us at least get a silt fence put up and some hay down to help stabilize the property behind me that was originally slated for their antenna. And that property looks like that today, except now it's overgrown by scotch broom. So, according to County Code 17, Section 550, 0.060. There are several guidelines, and that title in the code is strictly for wireless communications. It says in there that the towers have to be a minimum of 1 mile apart. If this project goes through, we're not going to have one tower, not two towers, but we're going to end up with three towers all within 1,000 feet of one another, well under the 1 mile law. Now, Pyramid Communications and PSCRN continue to say that there's no capacity on the giant 425-foot KPUD-operated cellular antenna, which is right next door to me. However, in June of 2017, they added their 11th cellular antenna for AT&T via Motorola Corporation. So we keep hearing that there's no capacity, but right now there's no less than 11 carriers on that. Currently on that antenna also is SEMCOM for Kitsap County and King County 911 service. There are two microwave arrays up there and just a host of antennas. So now we're going to move across the street with the project.
I was trying to find a picture of the antenna for you so you know what I'm talking about. I've got it here, and I'll show it to you, Ms. Roman. The antenna that's next to me that's operated and managed by KPUD is the old-time Channel 13 KCPQ antenna. Sticks out. You can't miss it. It's over 400 feet tall. On that facility, there's a 50-kilowatt generator with a 2,500-gallon diesel storage tank. And when the power goes out, and if anybody here in the audience is from View Park Road, they can tell you when the wind blows in October, the power goes out. That generator has run for as long as 5 days at a time, 24/7, nonstop. It's approximately 210 feet from my property. Our little neighborhood, after just a couple of days, is just a waft with diesel fumes. And the noise is just, it'll rattle the fillings in your teeth. Now, we're proposing another antenna, less than 700 feet from this current antenna, with the same setup. Another 1,000 gallons of diesel stored above ground, another 50-kilowatt generator in case the power goes out, and it's the same thing. So now, our little neighborhood, which is zoned rural residential, one single-family residence per 5 acres, is going to have two ginormous diesel generators pounding away when the power's out with approximately 4,000 gallons of diesel fuel stored above ground. That is my concern. On my side of the street, there are 6 private wells located within 400 feet of the KPUD site. Now, again, county code says that private wells need to be located less than 400 feet from any source of fuel. Across the street, where this proposal is, there are again no less than 6 private wells located within 400 feet of their proposed fuel farm. The problem being is accidents do happen. And if Mr. Neal's property is contaminated with fuel, diesel fuel, or the property across the street by me, the KPUD site, gets contaminated by diesel fuel and it leaches into the groundwater, my aquifer is his aquifer, which is the aquifer for 12 other neighbors, all within 1,000 feet of this project. So if one well gets contaminated with diesel oil, everybody's well in that vicinity will also be contaminated with diesel oil. According to Larry Olson from Olson Well Drilling, who's drilled a lot of wells on View Park Road, including the well that's on the KPUD site and my well, according to him, within a good quarter mile area, everybody is on the same water bubble underground. The aquifer is about 126 feet below the surface. So as we saw a picture of Mr. Neal's site, Mr. Neal operates a commercial sawmill and log storage yard. And Joe's been there for quite a while. Sorry, Mr. Neal. So now we have 2 diesel generators within 1,000 feet of each other, and we have a sawmill now that we have to contend with almost on a, I wouldn't say a daily basis, but it's regular enough. Mr. Neal has several log trucks all the way up to huge semi diesel tractor log trucks pulling 40-foot trailers, bringing logs in and out of that yard right across the street from me. Now, I'm not begrudging Joe or trying to take anything from his business, but now we're going to add another easement road with more vehicle traffic, again, in a rural residential neighborhood, little old View Park Road. What Mr. Smith failed to show you, and I'll show you these so you can see. His property is about less than 1,700 feet from Colville's Passage. Now, they just admitted that the drainage
on the north side of the property, which is the side towards View Park Road, is fairly level, and I will agree with that. However, being an engineer, I can tell you that on the east and west side of the southern border, the natural drainage from the road, because there are two culverts located within about 250 yards of these projects that carry the drainage from View Park from the north side to the south side, and then on down through natural ravines into the sound. Just up the coastline here from on Colville's Passage is Driftwood Cove. Now, the county has spent an exorbitant amount of time and effort and money declaring critical area habitats around the Puget Sound area. Just up from Joe's place is the community of Driftwood Cove. It has been declared an environmentally sensitive area under the Kitsap County Critical Areas Ordinance. And just beyond Driftwood Cove, up to the, I guess it would be the west, northwest, lies the outlet to Wilson Creek, which we all know in Kitsap County is a well-documented salmon-bearing stream. Now, unfortunately, if there was a diesel spill, hopefully it would be contained, but Mr. Neal, because of the size of his operation and the date and how long he's been in business, there is no engineered drainage on that property. It's pretty much a dirt road once you get in on his log yard. So now we've got diesel oil on the ground. We've got rainwater that's going to carry that diesel oil, and we all know that water flows downhill. That is my biggest concern, is the amount of diesel oil that is stored in this neighborhood. And like I said, we have almost 4,000 gallons stored above ground within 1,000 feet of the two operating antennas. Now, PSCRM keeps saying that there's no capacity on the KPUD site. However, like I mentioned, last year they just added their 11th antenna. And it is a Motorola operation for AT&T. The antenna behind me, which is the monopole, 165 foot, Crown Castle operated, owned by the big entity in all these antennas is American Tower.
That's the antenna that's behind you, that photo.
Correct. Okay. Correct. There are 8 cellular carriers on this antenna. This antenna also has a support facility. It has cooling fans and I won't get into the technicality of it, but it has cooling fans and a step-down mechanism for the power, and it cycles once every 30 seconds. And on a quiet evening, when we're sitting outside, sure enough, you can hear the fans running on this site. I guess my concern is, we're still skating around county code. We weren't notified like last time for a balloon test. And I just thank God that we're having a public hearing on this, because last time it got to the point to where they were ready to put the antenna up and they still had no permits. No building permit, nothing. Which is why the stop work order was issued. My wife and I were I guess I could say harassed, which is why we were granted the restraining order from the court, Judge Jans over next door. The gentleman that was working for Pyramid Communications on behalf...
It depends on your time frame about how much longer, I'm just in terms of balancing.
Yeah, I'm almost done.
Okay, all right.
Lost my train of thought. Anyway, we were afraid to go outside in our own yard. And especially in our house, we have glass doors, and we had, when I'd get up in the morning and go to work, my wife was in the home alone, and there were strange men walking around the house, knocking on the door and asking questions. anyway, it seems to me that the county code is pretty clear. I do think there's a better way to do this project. There are two antennas now that could be modified. It would save one less diesel generator being placed on the ground. It would be about 1,000 gallons of diesel oil that wouldn't have to be on the ground. And being that I already have two cellular antennas within just a few hundred feet of me, and now there's a third, I think you can say that our part of the neighborhood is pretty much cooperative as far as that goes. But I think this third antenna within 1,000 feet of the two existing, I think it's a bit much for any resident to bear, especially in a serene little neighborhood like we have on View Park Road. Thank you.
Just one moment. Did you wish to enter any of those documents into the record as exhibits?
Yeah, if you want I'll take the covers off of them. I'll leave you all the pictures.
Okay, why don't you sort those and remove the covers, and okay. Then we'll give that. Actually, the last exhibits were 40 through 46, and then this will be, we'll just include it under one exhibit number. This will be exhibit 47.
Okay.
And once you've compiled them, if you could give them to Ms. Walston.
I will. So, okay. Thank you, Ms. Sharma. Mm-hmm.
Okay. The next person I have on the sign-up sheet is Sean Douglas. Oh, okay. All right. Kathy Dunn.
Move this down?
Just so we capture it.
Okay.
Good morning. Your name for the record?
My name is Kathy Dunn.
And you swear to tell the truth this morning?
Yes.
Thank you.
I actually just signed thinking I was going to sign to be here, but after hearing some of the things, I feel like I want to speak up. And I actually have a couple of questions, which I don't know if I can.
It's not really a Q&A forum, but...
So where would I ask
this
those
questions? From the planning department after the hearing. We probably will be keeping the record open, so you'll have the opportunity to address to ask those questions and then to submit any follow-up on that.
Okay. So I'm a neighbor of the Neals and the Fergusons, and I was, originally given a letter from the Neals notifying us of this, which is proposed to happen. And I didn't at that time have any problem with it because I probably wasn't thinking as closely as I should have as to the implications of what could happen. So after hearing the things today, I want to say that I'm very sorry what has happened to the Fergusons. I have known Amy Neal for over 20 years, and I know that she would be upset if she knew what had happened to the Fergusons. I met Amy Neal through Master Gardeners and volunteering at South Colby Elementary, so I know she cares about the environment. So some of the things were pretty shocking, actually, for me to hear. One thing, though, that I wanted to note is that the county notice of this meeting we received at our house in our mailbox last night. I'm saying last night because that's when I checked it, when mm-hmm. I came home. On the little card, I didn't bring it with me, but I think it was dated... there's a date up above, and it said 10/3. So that's kind of surprising that that would be Wednesday. I know that we had Columbus Day on Monday, but that we would just get it now. I had seen the sign along the road, but I had no idea of the history that had happened with the property across the street. And I have heard the generators myself, and so I think that that is also a big problem, especially now. I mean, I hate to just say, for myself, but the Neal's property is here. There's one property and then ours. So that's very, very close. And I know, it's going to affect others too, but something I never thought about, the sound that we could get. And and our power does go out quite a bit. In fact, we have a generator hooked up to our box so that our house can get power, because after we've been there for about 15 years, after the first year of having our power go out, I don't know, just all the time, it was worth it for us to actually have one hooked in. So it does go out all the time. The wells, again, I'm on a well, and so that was concerning to me if there had been an accident. I don't understand, and this is my question, so I'm just going to let it go out there. I understand the need for the emergency broadcast, or not, whatever, for that need, but this is just a curiosity question. Why can this not be located in the area that it's needed? Like, why can't the tower be located on Vashon? Let's see, what else? When we first got the notification from the NEALs, we did try to look online about the electromagnetic radiation or the microwave studies and things like that, and there was such differing opinions about it, and it was so highly technical that it was hard for a layperson to understand what that could mean to us. So that's about it that I have to say. So,
okay. Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Let's see. Mama Oza? Yeah, apologies on the, I'll let you pronounce it so I've got it.
Marna Ose.
Marna Ose. Do you swear to tell the truth this morning? Thank you.
And again, I thought it was just a sign-up sheet for bodies, but I will just make a couple of comments if I could. We two were out of town. We just got this notice 2 days ago. So just want to say that. And thank you, Mr. Ferguson, for all of the information and the time that he's put into presenting it. I really appreciate that. It was very enlightening. I have wondering if the height of the tower can go up another 10, 20, 50 feet in the future without any comment from the community. If that would happen, that would definitely affect visual impact more than the balloon test shows that it could possibly do. One thing that hasn't been addressed just from a personal standpoint, I think in other communities it's been shown that property value goes down when there's a cell tower in the area by at least 20%, and that over 90% of people are less likely to purchase if there is an existing cell tower. So I think that's some important information. And yes, the generators are very loud in our neighborhood, and power goes out all the time. The community that was mentioned of Driftwood Cove, they have I believe it's a community well that they put in a handful of years ago. I think it's just two parcels over. The community is down on the water, and they were, wells were having an issue in the summertime. So they bought this parcel of land and built a reservoir and have it piped down. Again, I think it's only two parcels over. Whether if there was a diesel spill, if it would affect that large community well and all the homes that are down there. I don't know how many homes are down there, but that could be looked into. So, and our aquifer is obviously right there too. So, as far as if there was a spill of the diesel fuel there, is it a fire hazard? And how soon would the response be to that? because we are in a rural setting. That's an issue I think needs to be addressed. If it's a slow leak, who's going to notice it until some damage is done to the aquifer? So that's a concern that I also have. And I have a question. How long is it open for written letters?
I'm going to make a call on that at the end of the hearing. But as I mentioned earlier, yeah, the record will be kept open. Sounds like there were some notice issues.
Okay.
So.
I appreciate that. All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. And then Craig Antilla? Here. Okay. All right. That's all the people who are actually on the sign-up sheet. Is there anyone else here from the public who wish to testify on this proposal? Okay, let the record reflect that there is no one else who has indicated a wish to testify. At this point, the applicant will have the opportunity to address questions that have come up, and if the planning department has any clarifications or additional information. As we just heard, there were some questions about the need for the facility, given other facilities in the area, concerns about above ground emissions with the, air emissions with the above ground diesel storage tank, and then what are the measures in place to address from, an accident, say there's a spill with that storage tank, among the other questions, but those kind of were the highlights on those. And again, if you can state your name for the record.
Rick Cardoza.
And you remain under oath.
Thank you. Regarding the issues with another property, I can't speak to that. I wasn't involved in the project, so I don't know anything about the history. Wasn't involved in that project, so I cannot personally speak to that part of it. Just going down some of the concerns that were raised as far as the project today. The storage of diesel fuel and the operation of the generator are all within the purview of the fire laws. And currently, we have a building permit that's in process. It's my understanding that the fire review has been signed off, and that there is a need for another fire permit. It's one of the conditions in the staff report referred to as a fire operation permit. That will be filed immediately. I believe, tends to be the storage type of permit requirement. With regard to the diesel tanks that are proposed in the generator itself, the diesel tanks meet a UL listing It has quite a bit of input from fire departments, fire safety, health safety representatives going into the UL listing. The tanks are double lined. There are measures to, such as alarms and sensors that go off when a tank is being filled to avoid overflow. So you have a double lined tank, then you have sensors. There's also an ability to use a secondary catch basin at the top of the filler, and then the siphon or line, fuel line running from the tank outside of the shelter to the day tank in the shelter is also reviewed by fire and designed to meet those requirements. So with regard to the diesel tank, that is how that is reviewed. And the
paved underneath the diesel tank?
Underneath the tank, it is concrete, and so the fuel line runs underground for protection as well as to get out of any kind of freeze thaw risk. The moving to the generator, that and both of them are structurally engineered to for seismic. So that they're anchored to the concrete slab to avoid overturn. So talked a little bit about the actual tank itself as far as protections. Talked a little bit about the siphon for the fueling from one tank to another. and talked a little bit about the anchorage, which is part of the both building code as well as the fire codes. And so moving to the generator itself, I indicated that those are also, that is inside the shelter, the which would mitigate quite a bit of the noise. The generator and all of the equipment meets the county noise ordinances. And I can't speak to the other facilities, but as far as the application in hand, those are the other reviews that are ongoing or have been performed and subject to the conditional use permit. Moving to the question about why the facility could not be located, say, on Vashon Island. The issue, as I pointed out before, is the line of sight that's required. A major factor with locating on the backside, or what would be the west side of the island, is the topography. So as Mr. Smith indicated, that the farther you get back from the tower, the more it becomes visible is the essence of the line of sight. In other words, if you're on Vashon Island, in the foreground you would have trees and you would have geographic obstructions that would prohibit the line of sight that's needed both for the interconnect, microwave, point to point, as well as it would just be too close for part of the coverage objective, meaning that with the topography as it curves around the island, there would be nooks and crannies, so to speak. Pardon my language, but that is the reason that the tower has to be farther back to be able to see into those areas with the requested height for line of sight. Regarding the possibility of increasing the tower height, that possibly could invoke the FAA need to light the tower. I can't speak to the merits of doing that. The intent of the tower is to provide co-location. So the tower itself is co-locatable, and I would not foresee a need for another carrier or that PCERN would need to go higher. The modeling that we showed is the justification for the height that's been requested. So
I would assume to change the height, it would be another, it would be amendment to the permit, so it would be another public process on that. Although I know there are some provisions in the code for minor deviations, so, but I assume anything significant would require another CUP process or an amendment, which would follow the same process. So.
Yes, I believe so. So that that part I can't really speak to as far as the code requirement for that, but I believe that is correct. The regarding the existing towers in use, part of the issue that comes to play with existing towers is you look at them and they carry loading, is what we call that, and they and so the question is, well, why can't you just add more antennas? Well, what's happened over time is that the codes have changed. So a tower that looks like it's carrying antennas, there was a monopole shown, may not have the adequate capacity from an engineering standpoint in with regard to the foundation or the tower structure itself. So there's a graduation of building code requirements that in the past would have allowed use in that way, additional loading. But the codes have become more onerous regarding what they require in the way of engineering, both the tower structure itself as well as the foundation. So it's a function of two things. It's a function of the code has changed and become more restrictive, and that's happened several times in going from a certain class of code to graduating to a higher requirement for loading for engineering. And the other factor is that in many cases, the tower owner may have already leased to a co-locator, would be the term for an additional carrier added to the tower, or may have leased to one of the original carriers a loading that's not reflected in the in what you see at the tower today. So part of the structural analysis that's considered when looking at a tower has to incorporate all of the reservations, are the terms that we use to describe antennas that may not be on the tower today, but were leased or they have rights to add them. And so that's a little bit of a discussion about the monopole, the existing monopole. Moving to the taller tower, that's about a 450-foot guide tower. And just the use of guys itself is a different type of engineering. And I already spoke about how and entered into the record how that tower was considered. The issue is the engineering for the guy anchors and the engineering for the existing loading. And as I mentioned before, there was possibly already a lease in place for that carrier that was added that was may or may not have been considered in the non-viability memo that I provided from PCERN. Regarding, so I covered spills from the standpoint of fire response. I can't speak to that, but certainly the reviews that I indicated are in either in process or some have been performed. The other issue that was raised regarding, it's what we would call drainage or pollution control. We have filed a site development activity permit application that's currently in review. From the initial pre-application meetings, that's been determined to be a minor requirement since this is not considered a major development. In that process, both the engineering for it, there are things that are considered such as sheet flow, and that would be more or less how the water runs. In a flat area here, the engineering department is looking for dispersion. And so there are geotechnical reports that were provided to the county with regard to county and state standards for sheet flow, in this case dispersion, which is pollution protection with regard to receiving bodies of water. And that is a separate permit, but we certainly could provide the geotechnical information as well as the engineering for that purpose. Another aspect of the application and process was we applied for and received Kitsap County Health Department approvals, and that was uploaded. I could enter that into the record if you would like as well.
I have those in here. But if they're not, yes, it is. It's exhibit.
So that's intended to address wells as well as, I believe, other structures. But we did apply for, did receive, and I believe that that's been signed off by the health department on both applications. That would be building permit as well as the SDAP, the grading type permit. Right. And that's from my notes. That's what I can respond to from the comments, and be glad to answer any of the questions if there are any.
Okay. Thank you. Is there anything else from the planning department? Yes, Mr. Smith.
As I indicated earlier, there was another site looked at by...
and you remain under oath. So, yeah. Mr. Smith.
Tell the truth. There was another site that was analyzed. There was a balloon test, and there were some subcontractors maybe jumped the gun prior to... fires did some clearing and damaged the roadway.
That was the incident, Mr. Ferguson.
Yeah, yeah. And he probably found out about it before we did. We initiated a stop work order. However, we wanted to make sure, because the site was pretty well disturbed, so we had them put in some silt erosion control fencing and was trying to get them to repair the road. But since that site was abandoned, we moved across the street first to this site. So I'm not aware of what occurred after the fact. And I am aware that Mr. Ferguson did proceed through a court proceeding to have decision against the contractors, which the county was not listed on that. Mr. Ferguson had some concern about why he wasn't notified for the balloon test. Well, under the code, it says that it's 400 feet. And he's just right around the 400-foot boundary. Or it comes up to about the edge of View Park Lane, or road, I mean. Where the new standard under Title 21, it was notification requirements for any land use action was doubled to 800 feet. So there's a discrepancy between the two. The tanks and the location of this facility was reviewed and approved by the health district. The fire marshal will review the fire permit as far as potential incidents with the fuel tanks. And there was an engineered drainage report. It's in record. I believe that's exhibit number 7. If there's more than a 10% increase in height of the facility, that would require conditional use permit. And it'd require a full-blown CUP. It'd be a major amendment. It'd be a balloon test and the whole works. However, if under our current code and probably our future code, is that if there's any FAA lighting, then we can't support it. We'll recommend denial. And so they either have to lower it or find another location. So if they go up 50 feet, they're right at the window as far as requiring FAA lighting.
I can't remember the threshold on that, but maybe 200, yeah.
Yeah, it's about 200, unless you're right next to an airport.
Yeah.
The one thing that, based on the neighbors' concerns, and I can discuss with the applicant, is providing a noise report and documenting how the project will be consistent with the county noise ordinance. And based on location, at least the bulk of the impact should not impact the people up in the north side of View Park Road based on this location. Because this, like I said, this site's been a mill site for over 30 years. And if you've ever been around a sawmill, they're pretty loud.
Oh, just on the keeping the record open, Mr. Smith, I was probably going to do that, well, for at least 8 days, but maybe through Thursday or Friday of next week.
Okay.
There's a question on notice. So maybe
as far as the card notice?
Yeah. So maybe through October 19th, 5 p.m.
Okay. I'll check into it.
Okay. All right. Anything else on this one, procedural questions? Okay, so as to keeping the record open, the record on this will be kept open through Friday of next week. That's 5 p.m. Some questions on notice were raised, and so that's the reason for doing that. And that will give an opportunity to both the applicant and to anyone who wishes to provide additional written comments may do so. And if you can provide that comment to Ms. Walston, and of course, if there is anyone who has questions on the proposal, feel free to contact the planning department. Mr. Smith probably be the the best person to ask those questions of. And then once the record closes, then a decision on this will be issued within 10 business days. That decision will go to Ms. Walston. She will provide that to anyone who has testified today, and the applicant, of course. If you do want to get a copy of that, please make sure she has your email address. That's usually how that goes out. So make sure she's got the correct spelling on that. So, all right. Any other procedural questions? Anything in the back? Could you step forward to the microphone just so we can catch that for the record?
I was just
in your name again.
Oh, Kathy Dunn.
Mm-hmm.
I was just wondering, it looked like this might be recorded, and if there's a way that, like, our neighbors could view it, how would they
absolutely
access?
Yeah, if you go, just Google Kitsap County Hearing Examiner.
Okay.
And it says, there's a link that says watch this live.
Okay.
And so you click the link, and then it'll be, along with all the other hearings that the county has, it's on a video feed.
Okay,
so,
thank you.
Yeah, and there may be a lag time. I think it takes about, I don't know, a day or two to post. I don't know exactly, but that, Mr. Smith, is there?
Yeah, public access
TV. Yeah, public access TV is how it, so you can hear it. I think that's it. Anything else? Any other questions? Okay, so we are adjourning this matter, and again, we're keeping the record open through close of business Friday next week. But I think now, do we need a brief recess before we move on to the shoreline variance, or are we ready to go? Okay, so we'll take a 5-minute recess, and we'll move to the next matter on the agenda. Thank you all.